Let's continue our journey into Perek Vav in Hilchos Deos. We're still in Halacha Aleph. I have to say that this question of not so much peer pressure, although that's an underlying sub-theme, but the question of how one relates to one's environment and specifically the people in one's environment, right? This is a big issue for most of you who are going to different universities, and I imagine it may have been an issue for some of you when you went back to the States for Pesach. How do you deal with the question of, you know, being in an environment where on the one hand you feel this sense of camaraderie, responsibility. It's also uncomfortable to decide that now I went to yeshiva, I'm not talking to my old friends. On the other hand, how do you deal with the challenge of the fact that at the end of the day, if you're hanging out with good friends who haven't been in yeshiva, are in a different space, either you bring them up or they bring you down. It's very hard for status quo to maintain itself in that kind of environment. So how do you deal with that? So first, just to see what the Rambam says, and then we can see where we go with it. So we started this last week, but just to get everybody up to speed, Derech Briyato Shel Adam, right? This is Halacha Aleph. Derech Briyato Shel Adam, Liot Nimshach V'Deotav, Uv'Masav, Achar Reyav V'Chaverav. Okay? It is the way of a person to be pulled in his, I guess, character and in his actions. This, by the way, is interesting. The Rambam in Sefer Mitzvot, in I think Mitzvah Chet, talks about the fact that Avodas Hashem is basically sort of two different pieces. One is who you are, your character, your thought process, etc., and one is what you do. Okay? And you can be nimshach, you can be drawn. Why don't you come sit over here, then I won't have to lean over, right? You can be drawn in terms of the impact of the environment on you in both. In other words, you might be in an environment where you don't feel you're doing anything different. But the fact is that intellectually, emotionally, psychologically, you're changing by virtue of the environment. You could also be in an environment where you're not changing emotionally and psychologically and physiologically, but you're definitely changing in terms of what you do, right? You go to hang out with a bunch of friends, and you know, they go to eat in a treif restaurant. And you're really struggling with this because, like, how could you walk into a treif restaurant, you know? You decided now, you know, you're wearing a kippah all the time. So now you get to a treif restaurant, so if you take off the kippah, then they've changed what you do because now you're taking off your kippah. And if you don't take off your kippah, then you're walking into a treif restaurant with a kippah. And if you say, I'm not walking into a treif restaurant, you should know every single yeshiva and every group of guys from yeshiva high schools, public schools, doesn't matter, has this question on occasion. I don't think there's a single yeshiva where someone doesn't get this question. I've had it already three times since Pesach, right? How do you deal with that? And by the way, throw in the additional challenge of how do you do this and still walk away without not making a Chilul Hashem? Because the easiest way to do it is say, listen, I'm not calling my friends and I'm not talking to them, etc. But that's also difficult because you create enmity. And that's also not so simple, right? Okay, so it's the normal nature of a person to be drawn after his friends. Like, the people that you're close to will impact you. You can pretend that they don't. They will. At the end of the day, a person begins to behave as the people in his community and environment do. This is true on an individual level when you're out with a few friends. It's true on a communal level when people in shul do certain things. And it's true on a national level. If you live in a country where people in the country do those things, you know, Goldhagen wrote a book called Hitler's Willing Executioners and demonstrated that there were 70 million Germans when Hitler came to power. There were only, by the end of the war, 4 million active members of the Nazi Party. And he demonstrates that it would have been impossible to conduct the Holocaust and genocide, never mind Aryanization in all the early stages, without, in many cases, the active participation and at least the complicit acceptance of the overwhelming majority of the German population. And if you live in that society will impact you. Yeah?
But if everybody is following the status quo, so to speak, who's setting it?
Pardon?
If everybody's just doing what what the person next to them is doing, what they feel is they need to do to be comfortable and fit in, someone's setting it.
That's right. That's right. It's a core. There are two ways that status quo gets set. One way is from external factors, and one way is from internal factors.
Right. So, like, if you're in Antarctica and everyone wears a jacket, you're going to wear a jacket, but not because everyone's wearing a jacket. Because it's cold, and you need to wear a jacket.
Yeah. Let's say a guy came to this yeshiva at the beginning of the year, and he wasn't really used to wearing kippah. Right? So it's true that we also say something. Like, we'll say, listen, you know, you're in the Beit Midrash, right. You're in a certain environment, whatever. But I don't really have to work very hard at that, because you're in an environment, everybody's wearing a kippah. It's easy. And you wear a kippah. Why wouldn't you wear a kippah, right? But that's true with everything. If you're in Nazi Germany and it's understood that people don't shop You know, there was an official boycott that was launched in, I think, 1933. And Hitler had an enormous amount of resistance. He had resistance from industrialists who thought that the boycott would hurt them economically. He had resistance within the Nazi Party. And, of course, never mind from the West and the media and the press. And that's why the official Nazi boycott was only one day. They were originally going to launch it. They had one day. Then it became an unofficial boycott, right? And they would regularly break glasses. They would station Nazi thugs, you know, from the SA in front of different stores. And over a period of time, people stopped buying in Jewish stores because you didn't want to go into Jewish stores. Some people were just uncomfortable. Some people were scared. Some people didn't want to get involved. You can decide how you're going to create a status quo.
Obviously, this is a little bit different.
And by the way, let's call the status quo the majority.
Okay.
Right?
Last night, I saw you talking to him extensively. There was a guy wearing a t-shirt, a couple of guys wearing a t-shirt, Ani Kone Rak Mi Yehudim. How do you feel about
okay.
that? It's essentially a boycott of all Arab products. And
that's capital. A very good question.
It's like a little bit of a tangent, but...
I get very nervous.
Yeah.
No, I get very nervous. I'll give you the short version because it's a longer discussion. This is great for a Q&A. You just have to remember it because it's a really good discussion. But I'll give you the short version. I get very nervous when anybody generalizes about an entire society, population, community without sort of lending itself more to the specifics involved. I like the fact that it's I'm buying Jewish and not I refuse to buy Arab. At least there's something positive in that, right? And by the way, there is a halachic framework for that. In other words, it's true with Stuttgart, it's true with Parnassa. If my brother came, my brother's an electrician, and we're, you know, sort of looking into possibly building a basement. One of the reasons I want to build a basement is because then we can have more of you guys over for Shabbos, whatever. I'm naturally going to ask him. However, you know, I'm hopefully doing it with another neighbor, and if he gets a better electrician, then I have every right to say to my brother, listen, you know, I can't not, you know, he's looking and so much cheaper, whatever. But if I can get the same price from my brother and someone else, then there'd be something off with using someone else.
Right.
And I'm not talking about external factors. Let's say he's not perfect, whatever it might be. So now you walk into the old city, and you have to buy, I don't know, you have to buy a watch. And you walk through the Arab quarter, and you can buy a watch in the Arab quarter, or you can go to the Jewish quarter, and you can buy a Jewish watch.
Most likely for a lot more.
Right. So that's a legitimate question. In other words, if you have the opportunity to buy the same watch for the same price, then it could be that halachically you're obligated to go first to Jews, and by the way, that an Arab would be obligated to go first to an Arab. And there's nothing wrong with that. If every community supported its own, there'd be a lot less strife in the world. The question becomes, and this is the only reason there's a question, is what happens when the price is significant? Halacha does not demand that you buy Jewish in that event. There are those who consider that supporting Arab labor is undermining the Jewish state. You could make a case for that. I'm not sure I agree with it. I also think that there's a tremendous... within the context of halacha, there's a whole idea of ein metaknin takana shatzibur eino yecholim lamod bo. You don't make a rule if people can't live up to it. So a lot of it depends on the person. It depends on where the energy has come from. You know, suppose you live in, I don't know, Karnei Shamron, and you know that there are people there who are kabbalanim, who work in binyan, who are going out of business. They can't afford to make ends meet, and they're going to be destitute. And so you're willing to pay more to use Jewish labor because you feel an obligation to support these people. That's laudable. That's tremendous. And then if you're wearing that t-shirt because you want other people to do the same thing, that's laudable. If, on the other hand, you're wearing that t-shirt because you think that we should just kick all the Arabs out, etc., so that's problematic. That's an interesting question, right? That's about as much as fits in Hilchos Deos. It's a bigger question.
Pardon? To give people money for services or to help them.
To help them support themselves, right, absolutely.
I mean, he also like, his four of his friends, he's telling me four of his friends were killed. Two of them in Merkaz Rav.
Oh, wow.
And his dad was stabbed when he was 4 or 5. I mean, thank God his dad lived, but I could see. I was trying to, like, I didn't want to argue with him too much to get him, like, too upset, but I could see where he would be very upset about and wanting to wear, like wanting to. He's like saying, like, I think 95% of the whole Arabs hate us, and I'm like, I don't know where you get that number from, but
yeah, that's a pretty extreme thing to say.
Yeah.
I get nervous from people, but it doesn't matter. You know what, I'll give you one last line, and then I really want to get back to Hilchos Deos. It's like, you know, one of the lines that you hear, you know, today they estimate there are approximately 1 billion Muslims in the world. Let's say that's true, okay? So they say, you know, most Muslims aren't fundamentalists, and they don't hate us. And that, by the way, statistically is true. But let's think about what that means. Let's say that 90% of Muslims are not fundamentalists, and they're not interested in destroying the Jewish people. Let's say that's true. Right. So where does that leave 100 million? Right now, when Nazi Germany got rolling, and this is what I was talking about before, there were only 4 million, and that was at the end of the war. Let's say you have a couple million, you know, Nazis in the Nazi Party. Right. It doesn't matter what the other 900 million are doing. Because if that 100 million or even that 10 million are controlling Islam today, if they're the ones who are bombing and whatever, then that presents you with a significant problem. The solution to that problem is a little more complicated than all Arabs hate us. I don't think it's true that all Arabs hate us. I don't think we can ever know, by the way, because we unfortunately live in an environment where you're not really going to be able to say what an Arab, what you really think, and he's not really going to be able to tell you what he really thinks. If an Arab comes out and stands up and basically says, we support Israel and we support peace, he's putting his family at risk.
Right.
Now, you could make a case for saying that if they're not willing to stand up for democracy and rights and they're not willing to take a risk, they don't deserve to have a state. And that would be a legitimate thing to say. But then again, we didn't have to do that. So who are we to judge them? So it's a difficult question. Anyway, but back to Hilchos Deos. The first stage is at least to recognize that you are influenced by your environment. Now, sometimes people go into this question with the delusion, I'm not going to be impacted. I'm going to go to, I don't know, Binghamton or U of P or Rutgers or wherever it is, and I'm coming from yeshiva, and I'm determined that I'm going to be, you know, different. What the Rambam is saying, first and foremost, you have to know, it's the natural thing. If you can't find friends that support who you are, you're going to be with friends that don't support who you are, and that's going to influence you. You have to at least recognize that. Then the question becomes what you do about it. Okay, so let's keep going. Lefichach. Now the Rambam says, if you've accepted that as a given, does everybody agree that that's a given, that we get accepted by our peer group, right?
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know if it's necessarily that objective, because, like, I think naturally you're going to have some people who are maybe, for whatever reason, maybe they have a lower self-esteem or they're less self-confident, they are going to be quicker to blend in with their environment and give up whatever they thought their own personal beliefs were. And you're going to have some, I'm not saying we're going to be 100% entirely resilience to...
You definitely have varying degrees of influence. That's true. And you have people that are more actively influential. One of the questions is going to come, so then how does a Chabadnik go to be a Shaliach somewhere?
Exactly.
Right? So we're going to get to that. We're going to get into that. But we are impacted by our environment.
That's like an extreme, because he's going out there with the mission.
So that's a question. Can that make a difference, right? But at the very least, we are impacted by our environment. Everybody's impacted by our environment. Different people are impacted in different ways, right? לפיכך צריך אדם להתחבר לצדיקים ולהישב אצל החכמים תמיד כדי שילמד ממעשיהם. Now this is not rocket science. Right? In order to do this, right, so therefore the Rambam says, you should connect, you should align yourself with the types of people that are going to influence you well. Tzadikim, chachamim, people, by the way, if what we've been saying about chachmah runs true through the Rambam, then we're not talking about aligning yourself with a Torah scholar only. We're talking about aligning yourself with someone who's balanced, who's real, who's moderate, who has a healthy perspective. Right? If you go to some university and the only rav that you can find is someone who's very extreme, very fundamentalist, very machmir, and that's problematic for you, right? Then you have to realize that that's going to impact you if that's where you place yourself. It may be that in that circumstance, that's the only choice you have. Of course, that raises another question. Should you allow yourself to get into a situation where that's the only choice you have? But be that as it may. Right? What do you have to do in order to make this work? It's very simple. You have to define your goals. Like, who is it that you want to be? You know? You finish a year in yeshiva. Even like Pesach, you go back for Pesach, which is a small microcosm of this question, right? And you say, well, who do I want to be at the end of 2 weeks in the States, let's say? How many of you went to the States for Pesach? Okay, so the five of you, right? Okay, so it's the same question, it's just different, okay? I finish Pesach, you know, sort of Chorev Zman. My sense was that most guys here finished on a high, and they were into it, and, you know, varying degrees. And now you have this 2-3 weeks off, right? Which is a terrible thing to say, because you're never off from Torah and Mitzvahs, but for the purpose of this discussion. Okay, so you're going to do one of two things. You're either going back to the States, you know, or you're here doing Teolim or doing whatever, or some combination, you know, Tochnit Nisan and then whatever, right? And you say to yourself, okay, so who do I want to be at the end of these 3 weeks? Do I still want to be the person I am now? Do I want to have grown? Do I want to do, right? And then, once you've decided who you want to be, then you have to ask yourself, well, what peer group, what individuals, what role models are going to help me be whoever it is I want to be? And what role models, peer group, you know, environment is going to push me away from being who I want to be? Right? If you decide, and by the way, this isn't only true Jewishly. If you decide that you want to be excited about medicine because you want to do pre-med, So then, which environment is going to have a lot of students that are into pre-med, that are excited about it, that are going to give me opportunities to study medicine, whatever it might be? But it's certainly true about, you know, spirituality and character development and everything else, right? Make sense? Okay. So his definition, the Rambam here is talking about just the Torah environment. Like, if you leave yeshiva and you feel there's value to learning, which hopefully you do, right? And you go into an environment where there's no value to learning, it's only a matter of time before you lose your value for learning. So if you don't care, if you leave and you say, well, you know, this was fun, but I'm done with learning for now, this is just a waste of my time, then okay, then at least you're straight with yourself. But if you actually leave yeshiva and you feel there's a value to this, I'd like to still have some connection. I'd like to grow in my connection with, I don't know, tefillah, you know, Shabbat, Torah, mitzvah, whatever it might be, right? Let's say even on a more generic level, you feel like you really have grown ethically this year. You know, you've been studying Hechos Deus, you've become sensitive to things you never thought about, and you want to still grow ethically. So then that becomes a question. What type of environment is going to help me to grow ethically? Whether it's social actions or anything else, right? Okay, by the way, the Rambam says, V'leishev etzel ha-chachamim tamid. It's interesting. That's a very rare word in Hechos Deus. It's not exactly balanced. If you want to be influenced by that environment, you have to make that your environment, right? Like, there's an illusion that we have, that we think that you go to university and you kind of go to the Hillel and you grab an hour of learning once a week, and you're putting yourself in an environment that's better than no hour of learning a week. But it's not the same as making it your base. Like, you have to decide what you do, yeah? Okay. Right? V'yitrachek min harasha'im. Now we have a second part. And I think that this is the harder part. Everybody can find someone or some environment or some peer group that he thinks is a good influence. And it's a lot of work to do that, but you can do that. But then there's the flip side, which is recognizing that there's a peer group, individuals, a role model who's having a negative influence on you. That's a very hard thing to do. And the Rambam says, V'yitrachek min ha'rasha'im olchim b'choshech k'dei shelo yilmad mima'aseihem. Now think about this for a minute. What the Rambam is basically saying is, if you're in proximity to wickedness, to evil, to bad habits, you will be impacted. Like, let's take an easy example, okay? Let's say that, let's pick something that no one here, I imagine, would remotely imagine getting involved in. I don't know. Heroin. Okay, right? I think it's a pretty reasonable assessment. Nobody here wants to become a heroin addict. Okay. If you have a really good group of friends, and you go out, you know, 2-3 times a week, and you hang out, and you talk philosophy. I'm not saying you just go out and get drunk. You know, you're on campus, whatever. But it happens to be that they're all heroin addicts. They're just all heroin addicts. I don't know if this, you know, but they're into philosophy, and they have great discussions, but they're heroin addicts. You know, it's like, by the way, this would be an easy, you know, you could go out with 4 or 5 guys who are really good friends, and they all smoke. They all smoke. They all love to smoke. They all smoke cigarettes. And you go out with them regularly, and they're all smoking, right? The extreme example of this is the Army. And the overwhelming percentage, myself included, when you are in a situation where everybody's smoking, it's only a matter of time before you start smoking. So I think heroin is a little more of an extreme example. But if you suddenly look around the room and you realize everybody here does heroin, and that's your chevra, you've got a problem. Because what the Rambam is basically saying is that's going to impact you. It's only a matter of time before you try it. It's only a matter of time before you try it. So that may be an extreme example. But fill in anything for the blank of heroin. I don't know, Lashon Hara. Let's say you decide that Lashon Hara destroys the world. That even if you don't succeed learning regularly, you don't succeed davening later, but you're going to really make an effort to not speak Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim would agree with you. That would be the biggest accomplishment. But it happens to be that the guys you hang out with, they talk Lashon Hara. You know, I remember when I was in a certain community for a while, and I realized that the place that I was sitting in Shul on Shabbos, that's just what they did. They just hung out and schmoozed and talked Lashon Hara, and it's very seductive. So I switched my makom. I found a nice way to do it, you know, whatever. I had to talk to somebody. And then, I figured a way to do it. Because I didn't want my kids sitting in a place where that's all they did, in between the aliyos and sometimes during the aliyos, and they're talking Lashon Hara. Because you can not end up talking Lashon Hara if you're sitting with people who talk Lashon Hara. So if you've been able to define something as a negative influence, at the end of the day, if you want not to be influenced, you have to distance yourself from that influence. There's just no other way around it. Now we're going to find out what the exception is. But the translation of this is very difficult. If you go back to the States and you've got a whole bunch of friends, I don't know, you're going back to Boston, you're going back to Brandeis, or you don't know yet, right? But, you're going back to Brandeis. Okay, so if it's about the same, you'll stay, you'll be in Gush, you'll be, all right, then eventually you get to Brandeis, after Shana Gimel. So when you go back to Brandeis, so you'll run into a whole bunch of friends from Boston, right? So let's say you run into a whole bunch of friends, and they're just in a different space from you. Okay? And it's very difficult to define this because they may have grown in some ways and they may not have grown in other ways, and who are we to decide? So it's not about judging the person. It's about judging the impact of that person on you. That you can judge. And they don't, they're not shomrei Torah mitzvot, and they don't really have an issue with speaking Lashon Hara, and they don't have an issue, let's say, even with eating unkosher food. You know, maybe they won't go out and eat pork, but, you know, the unkosher pizza place, whatever. And you realize that you want to keep your growth pattern going. If you make them your chevra, if they become your chevra, that's where you're going to end up. 99 times out of 100, that's just where you're going to end up. Now, there is an exception we'll get to, right? You want to guess what the exception is? But no. What would be the reason that you might be able to take a risk? Right. No, it's if you're going with the express purpose of giving to them rather than just being with them. The Lubavitcher Rebbe in his Likutei Sichos was asked this question, and he deals with it. And he says, based on this Rambam, he says, if you're going to do a mitzvah, if you're going to do kiruv, that's his particular paradigm, right? Then the reason that you can do that is because you're so involved with giving that there's no room to receive. But you have to make sure that if you do that, that you're so immersed in the giving that there's no room to be receiving, and even then it's a risk. And even then he suggests, and Aaron Cutler, when he established the Lakewood Kollel, said, you have to have a minyan. He suggests you have to have a chavura. You have to at least have someone else. Tovim Hashnai Min Achad. Very difficult to do that alone. The Chabad will never send a shaliach. They will never send a single shaliach because you don't have anybody to back you up. And they prefer when people go in pairs.
The Rebbe's army?
Yeah, right. The Rebbe's army, right? Okay? So that's something to think about. Then you got to ask yourself, are you ready for that? Like, let's say Yair. He's 11. And he says, I've decided that I want to hang out in Beit Lechem and see if I can teach peace to the Palestinians, right? I'd say, look, it's a noble thing to say, but you're not, it's just not real. Like, you're 11 years old, you're not going to make a difference, you're going to get swallowed up there, right?
If you take the other time, it'll be okay.
It might be okay, right, okay? Et cetera, et cetera.
Well, no, Yaakov, you just go down there and take care of things.
Right. So if you are on campus, okay? You know, for example, let's keep going, right? You have to distance yourself from the evil, right? Okay? So, you know, when I was in high school, so there was this place, it was called the Piano Bar. It was like somewhere on Broadway in 60-something, whatever. And my brother and I had this whole bunch of friends from USY. And sometimes when they would come to town to be Shabbos by my parents, so once it's Shabbos, they would go there, right? So we would sometimes go with them and hang out with them, etc., right? When I got back from yeshiva or whatever, I stopped going there because I didn't think it was a good influence on me. Now, if there were a group of students who were going there, and I thought we could get into a deep theological discussion, I thought I could have an impact on them, you could make a case saying there'd be a legitimate reason to go with them, but you really have to know who you are, and you have to be able to measure whether you're succeeding in influencing them or they're succeeding in influencing you. And if you're not sure, then you have to take discretion as the better part of valor.
So do you think it was the place or the guys?
Pardon?
The place or the guys?
Both.
Because let's say you're with your friends, okay, you can make the case why it wouldn't be a good idea to go out in college with, like, these three heroin addicts from the frat across the street or whatever, so go to the bar with them might not be a good idea. But let's say you go to a bar with three guys from the Chabad, do you think there'd be anything, who aren't at the Chabad because they want to assuage some Jewish guilt about learning an hour a week? Let's say they're guys who are, like, serious guys.
Well, I think there's two things you have to do. One thing you have to do, look, you know, there was a guy who used to teach at Neve. What was his name? Great guy. I forget his name. He was an amazing guitarist. He used to go and hang out in the bars in town. He had payas and a beard, you know, whatever. He used to hang out. He was an amazing guitarist. He would sometimes bring his guitar and even hang out with these kids. And he would get to know them, and eventually he'd have them back for Shabbos, right? And I saw him years later, and he'd stopped doing it, right? He was actually back in the States for Parnassus reasons, whatever. And I asked him sort of what his thought process was, and instead he started realizing as much as he was enjoying having an influence on the guys were also having an influence on him. And he decided he needed a year to go back and learn and just to be sure that he was back in the space he wanted to be in. Like, you have to be healthy enough to recognize when things are impacting you. You also have to know there's a difference between a guy who goes, I don't know, like there's this program on in U of P called Heart to Heart, I think it's called. Yeah. Right? And it's basically, it was started by this guy, Hart Levine, basically to reach out to... Right.
I think it was
Termos. Oh, could be. Yeah, could be. I don't know. He's coming to speak to you guys, at the end of May. Yeah, because... We thought it'd be a good idea for you to hear about this, and he wants to start it on other campuses, and that's great. So he has a whole program where students who come to campus from you know, sort of yeshiva experiences in Israel, have a lot to give on campus. Why not harness this energy, give them a framework to do it in, and let them meet on less affiliated students? So, for example, Alex Jefferson, who's in U of P, so he stayed back from home for Pesach Seder.
Pluralistic Siddurim led by kids who are either in yeshiva or come from Jewish.
Right, so they had like all these Siddurim. And I asked him about it afterwards, and he felt like it was an enormous experience. But why? Now, you could imagine that if he went to, I don't know, you know, Rav Aralis Chassidim and the Rebbe and the Meir Sharim and asked them what they thought, that they might say, well, you know, you're going to hang out with Chotim, you're going to be a Chote. Like, that's the, right? And there's a legitimacy to that. But because you're going and you're in a situation where you're there just to give, and by the way, they're coming to receive, right? You've at least created an equation where the possibility of good things coming out of that are there, and you still have to remember that if you go to clean up the mud, you're going to get dirty. There's no suffix. Like, in certain areas, you'll grow, and in certain areas, you'll detract. I can say this for myself. You get involved in outreach, you get involved in education, you have a lot less time to learn. That's just the nature of the beast, right? So, if that's true, you just have to be aware of it. But you at least have to be able to recognize when things are having a bad influence on you, and you have to be healthy enough to say, you know what, this just isn't for me. And that may be painful sometimes. It's easy when it's just, you know, you're in a new campus and some guys say, join our frat and come with us to the bar. That's easy. But what about when it's your friend who you were really close with in 12th grade, and then he went to college, but you went to yeshiva, and now you're back, and he's in college, and you're in college, and he just wants to go out and, you know, go drinking with you. And you don't want that in your life anymore, but you don't want to offend him, right? So that becomes a much more complicated situation. And you have to ask yourself. Sometimes maybe you go, you know, you also have to know yourself. If you know, like I knew when I was 19 or 20 years old, or let's say after the army, that if I would go out with a bunch of friends to a bar, I wouldn't go and get roaring drunk. It just wasn't who I was anymore. But if you don't know that about yourself, so then that also might impact the situation. Is it worth the risk? Do I really want to feel that way? Right? How do you measure whether you're really making a difference or not? It's an interesting question, yeah?
Well, it also depends if in that case it's only one person, one friend of yours. It depends really on the person, that person, his personality, and like it might be more of a compromise depending on his personality.
Right. Yeah, look, you have to ask yourself. I think the mistake that most people make is they don't even ask themselves these questions. You know what I mean? I also think, by the way, that, you know, good friends, like one way of defining a good friend is that he respects where you're at and you respect where he's at, right? And so that becomes measured in how much room there is for compromise. Like I have friends who know that I won't go to certain places that they would easily go to, like an unkosher restaurant. But it doesn't bother them because we still want to have a kesher. So when we go out, we don't go to an unkosher restaurant. Right? So that's also part of the question. Can you create that balance?
I heard a rabbi say once that there's no point, there's no reason to go to secular college unless you're going to be hard with pain.
I disagree with that. I'm just saying that. It's a funny...
I would temper that by saying... No. It's a legitimate question. Look, I want you to know that if most people go to university for a bunch of different reasons. One reason people go to university is because they want... Pardon? Most people, you'd be surprised. Most people, they go to college because hopefully they want to grow intellectually, they want to get a certain amount of knowledge, okay. Some people go to college because they also want the college experience. They're excited. They're looking forward to being in some frat and getting whipped, roaring, drunk, all that sort of thing. Obviously, the boy who goes to a university for that reason is setting himself up for a lot of difficulty and for a lot of pitfalls. So you have to know who you are. The third thing you have to know is no matter what you do, no matter how successful you are, no matter how much growth can be accomplished on campus, you have to understand that you're going to be worn down spiritually and religiously when you're on a secular campus. That's just the nature of the beast. That's a fact. It's just the seductive power of secular university in the world today with everything that goes on is enormous. And you have to go in with a healthy attitude and know that it's there. So then the question is, okay, so what sort of an environment can I create for myself within the context of that environment? By the way, for the record, I'm not sure that the solution for the boy who wouldn't go to YU for various reasons that I understand, but recognizes the challenges of going to such a university, I'm not sure what the solution is for that boy. He's basically between a rock and a hard place. He's going to choose an option that isn't ideal. If he goes to YU, I'll give an example. There's one boy that I know who told me, point out, when we were talking about this discussion, he would never go to YU. So we were talking about why, and I hadn't brought it up. Like, I don't you figured out by now, I don't push Yeshiva University sort of aggressively. I think for some boys it's valuable, for some boys. But, you know, he said, listen, if I have to be in a place where they force me to do a double curriculum and they're asking me why I didn't come to Shir, it'll turn me right off and out the door. And it happened to be in his case. I agree with him. It doesn't matter if that's mature or not mature. That's who he is, right? So he's not going to YU. On the other hand, the university he was going to, he's setting himself up for some very difficult, you know, sort of secular environmental challenges, Jewishly. I don't know that the solution for that person exists. I do think, by the way, just as an aside, that something that the Rambam couldn't really address because didn't exist in his day is the opportunity to taste environments that are healthier periodically. In other words, when you were the Rambam, the idea of living in Morocco and going 2-3 times a year to Israel, that just wasn't something you would suggest to the masses. You needed to have significant funds to do that sort of thing, and it would use up most of a year to do it, right? But today, in today's world, a person can decide, he can be motivated, that I'm not going to let a year go by or 6 months go by without getting an injection. Sometimes the injection is coming to Israel, coming back to Yeshiva. Sometimes you say, I have spring break, I'm going to go take a week, and I'm going to learn even a liquid kol, you know, whatever it might be, just to get that piece of environment back. So that's also something to think about. Sometimes you can recognize you're in an environment that's not ideal. Give yourself a taste of an environment that is ideal for you, whatever it is, periodically. And of course, part of the question is, how do you create that environment? You know, I was telling somebody, I forget who, but somebody this week we were talking about this, and, you know, I've asked around a lot. I've asked other yeshivot who sort of look and see, you know, their alumni and what works. And I'll tell you an interesting thing. Even though I don't push hard and fill in and minyan, whatever, I can tell you that the boy on campus who gets up and goes to minyan every day is in a different space for the very simple reason that he's making himself part of a community and an environment that's a small community and it's a small environment, but those are the guys who go to minyan every day. And if you forget about davening, forget about going there to daven, just the fact that you go to daven and you're part of a chabura that's doing that will put you in a different space. It'll connect you to different people. Very, very, very valuable thing to do. The same is true, by the way, for learning. You know, I've talked to a few boys who succeeded in finding whatever it is. In some campuses, it's easy, like at U of P, Brandeis, right? In some campuses, it's very difficult. Stanford, it's not an easy thing to do. But if you can find that environment where you can sit and learn and create sort of windows of time, even if it's not an hour, even if it's 20 minutes, where you make yourself part of that environment on a regular basis, you'll give yourself the shot in the arm. You'll set yourself up for a healthier experience. But that's just, right? Okay. And he quotes the pasuk at the beginning of in Perek Yigimel, Ashrei Aish, Ashalo Alach Ba'atzat Rishayim. Right? Like, praise to see who has not followed the advice of, you know, the wicked. In other words, like, it's very easy. It's very seductive to listen to that. Like, what's a big deal? So you go out and get a beer. What's a big deal? So you know, go to a movie that isn't quite appropriate. What's it? Like, it's not such a, you know, especially for you guys, like, in your world, it's not such a big deal. But all these things add up. On the other hand, you have to be very careful because there's a certain arrogance that a person can come back from yeshiva with, right? Where you think that you've discovered Torah and you're God's gift to Frumkeit and you're just not going to do all these things, and you tell anyone that you know and everybody that you know, and sometimes you do it in a loud voice, I'm not doing that anymore. And that's too problematic on two levels. First of all, it's problematic because it's not really considering how it makes the other person feel. You know, it's like you can struggle with how to avoid challenging situations without declaring to the world that you're now from and they're not. That's the first reason it's challenging. The second reason it's challenging because it doesn't take into account how you make them feel. So that's a complex issue to think about, right? No, one is that you're declaring something, right, without taking into account sort of how it makes other people feel. And the other is that you're setting yourself up as like the paragon and paradigm of virtue, which is a dangerous thing to do. It's not healthy, right? By the way, something else. I think that when people go from... Look, most engines are not designed to handle going from 0 to 60 in an eighth of a second. And sometimes what happens is you go so far and you're so determined, you make it so black and white, that as soon as one little piece doesn't work out, the whole thing comes crashing down. Like, that's just an opinion that I have about everything. Approaching these things gradually is usually much healthier. You know, if you decide that that's it, I'm going to... You know, daven 3 times a day, I've decided I'm going to learn an hour in the morning, an hour at night. I'm only going to eat badatz kashrus. I'm going to wear my tzitzis, wear my tefillin, you know, make sure I don't wear shatnez, like the whole 9 yards every single day. And then, right, and then one day something drops because you've made yourself such a model. So then everything comes crumbling down. It's very healthy to realize that we're all still in growth flux and you're all trying to grow. And just be conscious of, you know, how much of an environment you can build for yourself and how healthy you can get it. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Because I want you to know this is the easy part. The easy part is I'm in, I don't know, U of P, Brandeis, Binghamton, wherever it is, and how do I deal with the people that come across my path? What about if you decide? What about if you come to the conclusion? And I'm not talking about if somebody else comes to the conclusion that it's not really the best environment for you Jewishly to be in Brandeis or U of P or whatever it is. You know, like, I have a lot of faith in my kids. I do. And, you know, Mayan is a good example. But I'll struggle. Like, if she tells me that she's decided she wants to go to Brandeis or U of P, I'll definitely struggle with that. If that's what she decides to do, then that's what she'll do, because that's just how I bring up my children. But the challenges that she would have Jewishly in a place like that are just myriad compared to what she's going to experience if she's doing university here, right? Not that there aren't challenges doing university here, right? So what if you decide, you know what, I made a mistake. I'm in an environment, and the majority of people around me are just, they're just not living on the standard. Like, you hear people saying, like, you know, it was such a greenhouse to be in Yerushalayim. I mean, think about last night. Like, you're sitting out in a field, and there's like 20, 30 bonfires all over the place, and this entire country is in Lag BaOmer mode. And you walk around Yerushalayim, which is different from most of the country, or Tzfat, and you feel like there's a certain kedusha to the day. Lag BaOmer, who thinks about Lag BaOmer? Now, next year, you're back in Brandeis, and it's Yom HaAtzmaut. And the best you can do is to wear a white shirt and blue pants, because you have finals and you have midterms or whatever. And the overwhelming flow and the majority of campus life just takes you in a completely different direction. So what do you do? What do you do if you're in an environment that's completely non-Jewish? And it's pushing you away from Jews, and you're not succeeding in creating your own environment to stave that off, you know? So the Rambam, and by the way, go even a stage further. It's 1933, and you're living in Germany. 1933 in Germany was just, you know, a year or two after Jews were on top of the world. I mean, they had rights, and they were protected democratically, and they could vote, and there were 100,000 out of 600,000 German Jews who went to serve in the army in World War I. They thought they were, you know, Germans before being Jews. And all of a sudden, they start looking around them, and they realize that the world is changing. And it's fascinating, by the way, to read the literature and the letters and the correspondences that are going on, even amongst Gedolei Torah, right? You're now living in a country that's becoming an evil country, right? What do you do about that? So most Jews in 1933-34 did not leave. They thought it would blow over. They thought, you know, it couldn't happen. They completely, and this is a dangerous thing to say, because who am I to judge them? I don't know that I would have done any different. But if you look now with the benefit of hindsight, which I realize is a kind of ridiculous thing to say, they completely ignored this Rambam. Look what the Rambam says. V'chein im haya b'medina shemin hagotea ra'im. If a person was in a country, in a state, whose customs were evil, and the people don't go in the straight path, you should go to a place where people behave according to a moral code. Right? Like a Jew in Germany, right, had the opportunity to learn this Rambam and to say, right, you know what, I'd be better off where? I don't know, that's an interesting question. America? I mean, I got my issues with America, but you have to give America tremendous credit in terms of the good that they've done for the Jewish people. And certainly, ethically, they were in a different space than Germany in 1934. And that's what the Rambam says. Now, the challenge is to see this when the writing is on the wall and not when the wall's already crumbled down, right? Like, what do you do? What do you do? You're sitting, you go to, I don't know, Rutgers, and you're finishing freshman year, and you look around, and you realize there's one other guy with a kippah on his head that you're friendly with. And you've been trying to go to Minyan, but they don't always have a Minyan. And Friday night dinner doesn't turn you on. And there's like no chevra for you. You don't really have a religious chevra. There's no one to talk to if you really want to learn, because you went to the JLI rabbi and you went to the Chabad rabbi. It doesn't really move you. So you basically created an environment yourself, and you're going to be there for the next 3 years. And you don't really have a Jewish environment that's causing you to grow. So what most people do in that situation is, you know, but I've committed and I want to get my degree and I'll tough it out and I'll work it out and afterwards I'll whatever. So the Rambam is saying that's a big mistake. And the truth is that there was a time where it was very difficult, but at least today we live in a world, if you find yourself in a campus where you're not able to create a healthy Jewish environment for yourself, then really what you're doing is you're risking your Jewish future versus your intellectual, economic, and, you know, university future. So does the person have the, and by the way, this is easy for me to say, right? I'm sitting in Yerushalayim in the old city. Do you have the tenacity to say, do you have the courage to say, maybe I need to switch to a different place? At least to ask the question. That's what the Rambam is saying, yeah.
So for economic and social issues, like, I can see what you're saying, but what if you're at a place where you think you're going to sacrifice Jewish, you're like it's going to be hard for you to go to davening and whatever, but at the same time, it's also going to put you in a position to really, like, help the world, like, and not just for college, just, like, in jobs in general, like, what if you're working in Africa, like helping poor kids get food, but that means that you can't keep Shabbos, you know, and, like...
Well, here's my opinion. I had this exact challenge when I went to overseas course. I was basically signing on for another 2 years where I knew that it would be more difficult for me to be religious, to get up and daven, to do all those things, because I was the only guy with a kippah. And that's not close to the challenge you would have, because at least I'm in an Israeli army. When I get out for Shabbat, I'm in Yerushalayim, right? Having said that, I decided to gauge whether I was, you know, what it was doing to me. And I had to be honest with myself, and it was very difficult. And one of the reasons why I didn't sign Keva, because at the end of your stint, they want you to sign on and go to be a, you know, deputy battalion commander, was, you know, today the army is much different than it was back then. Today there are a lot of guys. You go to Bad Echad, which is officer's course, and from what I've heard, it's like a yeshiva on Shabbos there. I mean, they have so many dati guys from so many yeshiva. But when I was there, it was different. I was afraid that if I went on, that I would have to give up my dream of going into Jewish education, of being into learning. I was just afraid I would dump it. I could already see that it was just much more difficult. You know when it was more difficult? I started to measure it, not when I was in the army, when I got out for Shabbos. Because when you're in the army and everybody watches you and you're the only guy that sees you, if you don't get up and daven, everybody like doesn't take you seriously. Right? So you knew as a Kiddush Hashem that motivated me. And you have to know who you are. Some people that works, some people doesn't. But when I would get out for Shabbat, and I'd be somewhere for Shabbat, or, you know, my brother and I would be, like, you know, in the apartment just hanging. So I started to find it much more difficult to get up from Minyan and go to Shul, because, like, I was so tired. And I hadn't felt that when I was in Yeshiva, and that's when I started to realize this is having a bad influence on me.
Right, but is that really, like, that bad an influence if you're not waking up for davening, but at the same time you're putting yourself in a position where you can help tons of people and where maybe you couldn't do that otherwise?
That's a good question. Is it such a bad influence if you're not waking up for davening, but you can really help a lot of people? I'll tell you two things that stay in my mind. One is very hard to think about at your age, but something to think about. You know, who you are and who you become is not only going to determine who you are, it's going to determine who your children are. You know, like, yesterday morning, Yonatan was exhausted. We went to this Benji, this march for my cousin, you know, this walk. It was incredible. There were like 2,500 people that showed up. And we walked like 10 kilometers. And Yonatan went already Thursday night to the cousins in Renanata so that he could be there to help them Friday morning. So he woke up at like 5 in the morning and davened on his own. And they had a whole, they'd setting up chairs. Like he worked like a dog till like 9:30. Then we did the 10-kilometer walk. By the time we got back, you know, and then he went out with his friends Friday night because they go hang or whatever. And he has a nice chavura of friends. So he got to sleep that night at like, I don't know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. He couldn't move. When I woke him up Shabbos morning, he couldn't move. Now, I don't force my kids to go to davening because I don't think that's the way to go with a 17-year-old. But on the other hand, they know how much I love when they come with me to davening, whatever. So I always wake him and I say, listen, if you don't want to come, you know, don't come, but I'll be disappointed, but I'd love to come with you. And he always, you know, he always gets up, right? He was exhausted. He was exhausted. He was sitting in shul. He went, he got up when we davened Shemini Esrei. He got up to, you know, the Lev Efrat shul, that little shul I'm in. So he got up to go stand by the door to get some air so that he could daven Shemini Esrei, a little more kavanah, right? And I was thinking about that. Like, he's 17. He's heading towards the end of 11th grade. That's what I want. Now, that's about defining your goals. I want my kids to want to be in shul. I want them to get something out of tefillah. I want them to get the same. And why? Because this enriches my life. Because I feel that I have such a treasure that I can share with my children, with my community. Like, it's a magnificent way of life. And I wanted to be able to share that with my kids. And I don't think I'd be able to share that with my kids if I didn't love it myself. Like, if you don't love sort of that experience, how are you going to expect your kids to love that experience, right? Like, my kids don't learn and like learning because someone tells them to. They just watch me. They have a Rebbe who loves learning. I love learning. So they love learning. So part of your challenge is who it is you want to be. And that's something, if I could pick the most valuable thing to be doing during summer's month, right? We have a month left. It's unbelievable. There's a month left to your whole year in Israel. That's really your biggest question. Who is it that I want to be? I'm going off to the summer, and then I'm going off to university, and said, who do I want to be? You know, do I want to be religious? What's my definition of religious? So how am I going to do that? What are the pros and cons? But whatever you decide when you leave yeshiva, if you wait to think about it until the end of your freshman year, it's going to be a different answer. But whatever that definition is, like let's say you just decide that you want a home. You know, like I don't know how you feel when you sit around the Friday night table with your family. Like I love Friday night. I love it. And I want that for my family. I wouldn't put that at risk for anything in the world. Not working in Africa, not creating the Salk vaccine, but that's just me. Why?
It's like, I don't know. I mean, if you have the opportunity to help so many people or to have such a positive effect on the world and to give, and even to implant your kids with those values, then, like, you know...
Well, why do you think you...
sacrificing that for the sake of,
like... I would tell you two things. First of all, someone has yet to show me the scenario that will say that in order to have Shabbat in my life and Jewish religion in my life, I have to give up becoming a good person who contributes to the world. In today's environment,
right,
there's more than enough range to be able to do that.
No, not Shabbat necessarily, but even in college.
Anything.
You know, you're going to a place where somebody can help you become like the best, I don't know, I'm going to psychology, so like the best psychiatrist you can possibly be and help so many people and start your own thing. With
well, think about this.
And like, you might have to sacrifice, you know, maybe go
right,
to
but think about this. There are, Baruch Hashem, many, many, many psychiatrists in the world. And it would be audacious to assume that any university, Harvard, Princeton, and Yale included, could claim that if you want to be the best psychiatrist, you have to go to their university, right? Agreed?
Yeah.
There are best psychiatrists everywhere. So that's when you also get to say, well, what are the other factors? By the way, a person who goes to be a psychiatrist, but he's in an internal conflict with himself, religiously, philosophically, theologically, that's going to affect his ability to be a good psychiatrist also. You know, you have to be at peace with yourself in order to be able to give that to others. You know, so what I'm saying is, I don't think that you necessarily have to choose between, you know, going to Lakewood or the Mir or going to, I don't know, University of Winnetoba. But if you're choosing between, let's say, you know, I don't know, Rutgers and NYU or Brandeis and University of Florida, when you start to look at those options, then there's a very clear difference Jewishly. And it's very easy, like if a person wants to, I think one of the reasons we don't change environments when we kind of recognize that we're challenged by it is just because it's a lot of work. You know, there's something to inertia. I'm already here and whatever, and that's the killer. That's what you have to be careful with. You have to be willing. You know, the Gemara says, Mishaneh Makom, Mishaneh Mazal. It's a big Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, I think, on Daf Yud. Sometimes you change a lot in your life just by changing where you are. You always have to keep that open. And by the way, it doesn't have to be extreme. Sometimes changing who you are, you know, we have a student from last year who came to us as a public school student. I mean, he wasn't just saying that intermarriage wouldn't bother him. He was dating a non-Jewish girl. Right? And he really got into it. And he was going to University of Florida. And you know me already. I'm not the one who's going to push a kid and start haranguing him. You shouldn't go. You figure out that's where he's going to go. So you help him. He goes 3 miles on Shabbat to a Chabad house. So I recently had a discussion with him because I said to him, look, I just want you to be honest with yourself. Are you really going to be able to keep this up for 4 years? On the other hand, he's in a program. He does, cartooning or whatever it is. He's in a program that's one of the best of the country. And it's really opening up all sorts of options for him, and he wants to do this for good reasons. Very difficult. At least you have to be aware of the challenge. You have to know that it's not always black and white. So create the environment off campus in Florida if that's what you need to do. But how driven you are, you just have to know it's going to wear you down. And by the way, I'll give you another example. Part of the collective environment that you create for yourself when you finish yeshiva isn't only about where you are, but who you're in touch with. Like, I see this. There are students this year who really want to stay connected to us. And there isn't a student who wants it or doesn't get it. Just doesn't exist. And then there are students that, you know, whatever, like, we'll try. We're in touch with them. But, you know, it's not as critical for them, for good reasons or bad. So if you feel that there are rebbeim here or content here or whatever it might be that is having a good influence on you, don't wait till you're 6 months into your freshman year to realize, wow, chaval, I have to call them up. Create that recipe with us and we'll be thrilled. You know, that's an easy thing to do, right? So he goes on. We got to stop. Okay, I thought we finished this today, but all right. So discussion, you know, I don't claim to have all the answers, but I think it's valuable to think about the questions.
1:15, what we mean by dorm.
Are people actually, are fellows going to be there? 1:15.